Hello and welcome to the Roughing the Kicker podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on ArrowheadAddicts.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, and today we've got to get into the show as quickly as humanly possible because there is just so much to talk about. The Chiefs win in frankly dominant fashion over the Indianapolis Colts on the road in Indy, winning with style in a way that I actually thought they would do, but they put together an incredible first and second half of football. But they did it for a large portion of the game without their two most important, healthy, active offensive players. Then we find out yesterday that the most important offensive player of this generation for the Kansas City Chiefs is done for the season, Jamaal Charles having a second knee injury. The Chiefs are having all sorts of roster turnover right now. Parker Anger, the starting guard, is out for the year. And there's so much to be encouraged by through the Colts game. There are at least three segments of this show today that could be their own shows completely on their own, but we only have one show to put out right now. We've got to get to all of it right now. Let's start off with the most recent news, which is all of the roster moves the Chiefs have made. The most important one and the most impactful one being Jamaal Charles returning to the injured reserve. He's done for the year. There's a chance he could return for the playoffs. He's technically out for at least 8 weeks with the IR designated for return. But he's to the IR. I would be shocked to see him back this year. At this point, I would be a little bit surprised to see him as a Chief again. Here's what Ian Rappaport had on the original report here. After visiting Dr. James Andrews, Chiefs running back Jamaal Charles will need a second surgery on his knee, source said. The severity is unclear. There is a lot of, like, eulogizing going on for Jamaal Charles on Twitter and around Chiefs blogs and stuff everywhere, justifiably. Like, that's not a criticism at all. I'm not going to totally do that right now because it's too depressing, and there's actually a point here in a little bit that someone on Twitter made that I'll point out to why Jamaal Charles might not be done here. But the immediate news on this was that the Chiefs signed former Titans running back Bishop Sankey. He came off of the Patriots practice squad. He's on the active roster now. Darren Reeves, still in the practice squad, has not been brought up. And the Chiefs worked out, among others, former number 3 overall pick Trent Richardson, which is just horrendous. Moving from Jamaal Charles to Trent Richardson is like going from Heath Ledger's Joker in The Dark Knight to Jared Leto's Joker in Suicide Squad. Like, it is an all-time great and like a cheap imitation of an actual NFL running back. That is so depressing. But I've got a lot of questions about what happened with Jamaal Charles here. I think most of us have to have a lot of questions. What happened? How did it? Was it re-aggravated at some point in his rehab? Was it re-aggravated at some point whenever he was actually playing this year? He hasn't played very much this season at all. I believe he had less than 20 carries this year. And he had just the one carry in the game against the Saints for no yards. He didn't, like, leave on a stretcher or anything. Or on a cart. He wasn't carted off. He just didn't get on the field again. There was no on-field moment whenever he was re-injured that we saw. So what does this mean? I saw somewhere else. I don't have the tweet in front of me now. But I saw somewhere that Dr. James Andrews and the Chiefs both had trouble identifying the source of the pain in Jamaal Charles' knee. And so that's why he has to go back in for this surgery to figure out what is still wrong in here. I'm curious about the timeline of all of this. We may never be able to find that out. One other thing that I'm a little bit terrified of, though, is the return of Justin Houston. Justin Houston was injured for a couple of months before the Chiefs actually had him get season-ending surgery, and he was ineffective whenever he came back to play a few snaps in the playoff games, I guess. That was handled poorly at the time. It's why Justin Houston's not back yet. If he would have gone into surgery as soon as he tore his ACL, then he would be back by now. That was mishandled. Now the return of Jamaal Charles being mishandled, that might have been unavoidable. I can't say for sure that the Chiefs are certainly at fault here. Knees are tricky, and knees are different. Going from one knee to the other for Jamaal Charles, he said on the record that it's a different type of rehab. It's good to have the experience, so he knows what the rehab process is like, but each of his knees are different. There's certainly a difference between Jamaal Charles and Justin Houston and their rehabs and their knees and how efficient they can be coming back from the injury. Jamaal Charles was efficient coming back from his first ACL reconstruction on the other knee. But I'm worried about the return of Justin Houston here. And it's again why I've been beating the kind of boring drum for please, caution, with the return of Justin Houston. No rushing him back. He needs to feel right before he's back on the field. And also Philip Gaines, you know, his return has been a little bit off and on, but he seems to be stabilizing a little bit now. I'm just very nervous. I think right now the Chiefs' track record with knees, especially with Justin Houston's and Jamaal Charles most recently, those are bad marks on their report card for dealing with knee injuries. So I'm just a little bit more hesitant about my optimism with Justin Houston. Back to Jamaal Charles, though. Ben Almquist at Citadel Chief on Twitter was going kind of against the current, I think, with this tweet. Said, honestly, I doubt this is it for Charles. I expect a restructuring of his contract in the offseason. And that wouldn't shock me. I believe that Jamaal Charles next year, via Joel Corey on Twitter, I believe that his cap number is $7 million, his salary and his cap hit for the Chiefs next year. He can't possibly be paid $7 million next year by the Chiefs. That's just not going to happen, especially when they're paying Spencer Ware and Charkandrick West. Like, not big money, but they're both those guys will be under contract next year for good prices for the team. You can't afford to bring back Jamaal Charles at $7 million. Especially with a team that I think is going to try actually rather hard to keep Dontari Poe, something that I was not believing in the offseason. After the Chiefs drafted Chris Jones, I was starting to go the other direction. Now I'm starting to think that the Chiefs do, in fact, end up bringing Dontari Poe back, or at least trying to. The Chiefs have to pay guys. They've backloaded some contracts. They're paying Tom Bahali for a while. They're going to be paying Justin Houston for a long time, paying Eric Fisher for a long time. They're going to have to figure out what to do with Alex Smith in the quarterback position. Every time you're talking about a $7 million cut, you can get $7 million out of your salary cap. You're going to want to really explore that, especially now for a guy that's been basically out for 2 years. That's the nuts and bolts, and it's kind of even icky to look that far ahead, because this is from Tom Fear at TJF Sports on Twitter. He said, when Jamaal Charles rushed with 3 yards or less to go, this is one of the most incredible stats, I think. With 3 yards or less to go, he converted it 73.3% of the time. So on 3rd and 3, on average, you give Jamaal Charles the ball, he's converting that 73.3% of the time. For comparison, LaDainian Tomlinson was converting 63.6% of the time. Adrian Peterson, 62.1% of the time. Barry Sanders, 52.8% of the time. Emmett Smith, 60.5. There are so many incredible Jamaal Charles stats, and I'm concerned and I'm afraid and I'm bummed out that by not being able to play into his 30s, he's not going to get the recognition that he deserves for being truly maybe the greatest running back of this generation. The longevity of Adrian Peterson, who's also going to have missed 2 full seasons, the longevity of a guy like Adrian Peterson is going to, or even like guys like Frank Gore, who I told you last week I wasn't afraid of, and I was right, damn it. But those guys who are able to play and just be around for so long and rack up their stats for so long, those guys are going to be Hall of Famers, no question. They were great in their prime and also continued beyond their prime. Charles right now, I don't know if we're going to get to see a post-prime Jamaal Charles. It might just be the prime of Jamaal Charles and then kind of disappears because of his injuries. So it's depressing. It really seeing that news was totally unsurprising. I thought after I heard that Charles was going to see Dr. James Andrews, and after I saw Parker Anger was ruled out so quickly on Sunday, I figured both of those guys would end up probably being done for the year, and that ended up being the case. So using that as a segue, I guess, to Parker Anger, starting guard for the Chiefs, he's out for the year with a, I believe, a torn ACL, also a knee injury. It was obvious when it happened during the Colts game, and he was able to walk off with help, but that doesn't usually mean anything good for your ACL. It's typically about side to side and backwards movement that the ACL, you have to have it for that. He's done for the year. It's a bummer, and it's also one thing that he and Charles both have in common here is that the running back position and the guard position, I've been saying this for like 2 years now, those are the two deepest positions on the Chiefs roster, and especially this season. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif has been playing pretty well. Parker Anger has been playing well, but still playing like a rookie. With behind Parker Anger, the Chiefs having Zach Fulton and Ja Reed, I'm not horrendously concerned about the guard position. Both of those guys can play the rest of the season and not make the Chiefs take a big step backwards. Anger has played well. I'm concerned for his development because I do think he is. I think he and LDT and Mitch Morse, frankly, I think the starting five for the next 5 years for the Chiefs of the goal is, or at least the next 3 years, the goal is for it to be Fisher, Enger, Morse, LDT, and Mitchell, and Mitchell Schwartz. That's the goal, and I'm concerned now about Parker Ingram's development. But for this season, plugging in Fulton or Ja Reed at any of those spots for a little bit is going to be fine. Speaking of the offensive line, this is a stat that I saw on Twitter yesterday from Ben Stockwell from Pro Football Focus. He said, these are the offensive tackles getting the least help in pass protection this season. So the least help by keeping a tight end to help, keeping a tight end to chip, maybe even having backs come up to give them help whenever they're dealing with a you know, high-profile edge rusher. These are the offensive tackles in all of football getting the least help. Eric Fisher, Mitchell Schwartz, Terrence Williams, and then a guy from Green Bay and a guy from Arizona. The key there is those first two names. Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz, if I'm reading this tweet at all correctly, are getting the least help in football with having a guy help in pass protection in the whole league this season. That's incredible. If you can say one of those, if you could just have the number one guy or the number two guy on that list, then you can say, well, I can afford to let one of the tight ends stay in the help block for the other tackle. But when both of your guys are completely handling the edges, when they're handling the edges by themselves more often than anyone else in football, that is a tremendous advantage for your passing game. Because not only can you have the luxury of keeping a back in the backfield to dance around and make sure nobody comes through the middle, or anywhere, you have so much more flexibility with the number of receivers you can send out, especially if you're lining up Travis Kelce and Demetrius Harris on either end of the offensive line. You can let both of those guys go out to catch passes, to run routes, and have total faith in Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz holding up their ends of the bargain. There's some optimism to cut through the pain of Jamaal Charles and Parker Anger being done for the year. There's some optimism, especially about the offensive line. I already mentioned that the Chiefs signed Bishop Sankey. Niall Davis was released by the Packers and then claimed by the Jets and then released by the Jets within the span of, like, I think a day. So he's back out there. If the Chiefs were interested in bringing back Niall Davis, they could now. I don't think that's an insane idea. He knows the system. And if Spencer Ware is not going to be able to be back for the Jags game on Sunday, that would not surprise me one bit to bring back Niall Davis. But that's not wholly expected at this point. Niall Davis being released, by the way, by the Packers as early as he was means that the Chiefs don't get anything in return for that trade. So the Chiefs essentially just cut Niall Davis. And then linebacker Terrence Smith got the call from the practice squad to fill up one of the roster spots. Right now, though, with all of the moves the Chiefs have made, also releasing inside linebacker Sam Barrington, and I believe also releasing linebacker C.O. Moore after the week they played the Colts. With all of those moves they've made, as I recorded this podcast right now, it's a little after 11 a.m. on Wednesday. The Chiefs still have a couple of open roster spots. The trade deadline came and went, and the Chiefs were not a part of it, other than the Niall Davis trade, obviously, which ended up being for nothing. But as of right now, the Chiefs have a couple of open roster spots where they might bring in some depth guys, depending on what the different positions look like going into the game on Sunday against Jacksonville. I would still not be surprised to see them bring up Darren Reeves if Spencer Ware is out. In fact, I would expect it. Then going into the game would be Charkandrick West, Darren Reeves, and Bishop Sankey would be your three starting running backs. And then maybe you bring in another offensive lineman to be able to give you some more flexibility in the middle with Enger being out. A lot of options there. Maybe they end up bringing up a third quarterback, but Alex Smith apparently is totally fine. We'll talk about him now and the rest of the Indianapolis Colts game right after this. If you're a fan of this show, you can support the show at patreon.com/RTK. That's patreon.com/RTK. You can give a little bit of money each month to help support the show, to keep it rolling, to keep me turning out two episodes every single week. Right now, we are in, frankly, the heat of the season, right in the smack dab middle. And these are the people that have helped to get the show this far. The $20 group is Ty Declare at TyDeclare44 on Twitter. Andy Simpson, Randy Singh, who is at Randy_Singh_. Ray Hines at Big Turf Guy. And Derek Vaughn at D_Vaughn88. $10 group is Christine Roadlander at C Roadlander. And Todd Sullivan at Tito Sullivino. And the $5 group is Josh Beadle. You can support the show financially, a little bit of money there every month. Or if you want to support the show other ways, you can leave reviews on iTunes. You can subscribe to the show wherever you subscribe to podcasts, on your phone, on your computer, by visiting and commenting on Arrowhead Addict, on Blog Talk Radio. Following me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. You can link the show on Facebook at facebook.com/RTK Show. The more that you share the show, click the show, listen to the show, and support the show, the more that I at least convince myself, the more that I can do with it, and the wider this reach can become. So I appreciate your support in whatever way you choose to give it. If you're listening to it right now, you've already helped by simply clicking and listening to me talk for 15 minutes before I even get to the actual Colts game. Chiefs 30. Colts 14 in a game that went shockingly close to how I expected it to, like from a stylistic standpoint. I think I had this game being 28-17 or something like that. 2 weeks in a row, I've gotten a shocking amount of this information right, of these guesses right in these preview shows. But again, stylistically, this game kind of went how I expected it to. The Chiefs have played similar games 3 weeks in a row. They played the Saints, they played the Raiders, then the Saints, then the Colts. Three teams with super strong offenses and super weak defenses. Third time was the charm for the Chiefs to actually put together a solid first half and a solid second half. This is the most important stat right now to me. After the bye week, the Chiefs' defense has allowed 15 points per game versus three top 10 offenses. That's 10 points to Oakland, 21 versus New Orleans, and 14 versus the Colts. The game in Oakland and Indy were in Oakland and Indy. And even now, after getting stepped on by the Chiefs, all three of those offenses are still in the top 10 in points per game. That's incredible. Like, that is an incredible showing for a defense that, for one of those games, lost Phillip Gaines partway through versus against Oakland, had no Phillip Gaines against New Orleans, and then lost DJ White partway through, and then in Indy did it with no DJ White at all. None of those games did they have Justin Houston. Allen Bailey got hurt, I believe, during the Raiders game. He's done for the year. Justin March, not in the roster, done for the year. For as much as I still, to this day, even the week after beating the Colts in Indy, to this day, I still have not the opposite of a soft spot in my heart. I have a wall built around my heart to prevent Bob Sutton from getting any closer. I still hold a grudge against Bob Sutton for the Chiefs-Colts playoff game and the defense's performance in the second half there. And I had significant concerns before the bye week about Bob Sutton and his defense. But man, it's hard to be able to pinpoint exactly if it's the talent that has been brought in by John Dorsey predominantly, or if it's the scheme by Bob Sutton, or if in all likelihood a combination of both of those things is what has led to the Chiefs having a really stupendous defensive effort against three really, really top caliber defenses. I'm at the point where I'm looking at this game against Jacksonville coming up on Sunday, and I'll have a preview show for that later on in the week. I'm looking at that game against Jacksonville saying, how are the Jags going to score? How are the Jags going to create any sort of offense? So I think the defense is the story of the day, the story of the year, especially the story after the bye week so far for this team. But the offense had a lot going on against the Colts here. First of all, if you watched the game or paid attention at all, you understand Alex Smith he suffered some sort of apparent head injury. Nick Foles came in. Alex Smith came back in and then got another apparent head injury. The second time he was ruled out through the concussion protocol. Although there's been conflicting reports now on if he actually supposedly had a concussion or not. We're going to assume he had a concussion based on the fact that he couldn't, like, stand up or pass the concussion test the second time around. In fact, let's go ahead and talk about that now, I guess, because I don't know when else we're going to talk about it. If you haven't read it yet, Sam Mellinger for the Kansas City Star had a tremendous article, I think it came out on Monday morning, about how the culprit in Alex Smith suffering two head injuries in a row in this game, it wasn't the Colts defense, it wasn't the turf, it wasn't Andy Reid, it wasn't running a read option there. It was the NFL's protocol. The fact that Alex Smith could pass the first time and then come back and then suffer what appeared to be a second and more severe head injury on a play that wouldn't have necessarily been maybe would not have been a head injury or not have been a concussion if he hadn't had the one before. The fact that you could return to a game and get what appears to be a second concussion, That is a flaw in the NFL system. I do think that Andy Reid has some responsibility to protect his quarterback in general, especially on one of the hardest turfs in the NFL, and especially after having a head injury before that. I think Andy Reid should have played Alex Smith more smartly there, and we don't even know necessarily that Andy Reid called that play. That might have been an Alex Smith audible to that read option. But Andy Reid needs to protect his quarterback to an extent. At the same time, whenever an independent neurologist, whenever your team training staff, your doctors say, this guy is good to go, then you take that. You say, well, the doctor said you're good to go. Let's go. Let's get our best guy back in there. And I completely understand that. I don't think for a second that if the neurologist would have come in and grabbed Andy Reid and said, hey, listen, Smith really, really, really should not come back in the game here. I don't think for a second Andy Reid would have been like, really? Are you sure? Could we just squeeze him in? Could we fudge some numbers? Could we say he passed the test? Andy Reid's not good. That's not an Andy Reid move. That's not an any head coach in the NFL move, frankly. The NFL's under too much of a microscope now. I don't think this is an issue of Andy Reid or anyone. I don't think it's an issue of Andy Reid rushing Alex Smith back. Smith left with a head injury, passed the protocol, came back, and the doctor, the independent neurologist, etc., said to Andy Reid, hey, Alex Smith is ready to go back in. So Andy Reid put him back in. My knee-jerk reaction was absolutely fury at Andy Reid. If you can go check out my Twitter timeline and find when Alex Smith got hurt. And I am baffled by the coaching that led to Andy Reid letting Alex Smith run a read option. I was beside myself at that time. Reading Mellinger's column changed my perspective on it. If you're told that a guy is ready to go, while you do want to be constantly protecting your quarterback as much as you can, when you're told a guy is ready to go and is healthy and is ostensibly 100%, then you use him. So my rage has turned from Andy Reid for the most part and sort of back towards the NFL's concussion protocol that let Alex Smith back into the game too soon and back into the game when he should not have been back in the game. There's my Alex Smith concussion couple of minutes. Spencer Ware's concussion, I don't even remember seeing it happen. And he also, as I do this show, which is now it's 11:25 on Wednesday morning, haven't heard anything about his status going forward. That's a case where he had a concussion, left the game, and did not return. Overall, though, what losing Smith and Ware had to say for the rest of this game as a whole is the depth of the team here is better than we thought in more important places than I understood. Nick Foles had a stupendous showing whenever he was most desperately needed here. And a lot of his best plays were on Colts mistakes. He had blown coverages they took advantage of. Tyreek Hill morphed into Calvin Johnson. There were plenty of instances where it was the Colts giving Nick Foles something. But that's part of it, though. The Colts gave Nick Foles chances to look better than I think he actually is, and he took advantage of them. He took them. He was given chances to capitalize on mistakes made by a poor defense. He successfully did that. I will take that one 100% of the time. That is, he took advantage of those mistakes. He took advantage of those mistakes made by the Colts, and he made a few plays of his own that he created, that he and Andy Reid's scheme and his own arm created. You can't ask for anything else from a backup. And on the issue of the routes and everything, this was unquestionably, in my mind, Andy Reid's best game of the year. I tweeted that the Colts played in Indianapolis on Sunday. And I will not apologize for that pun. Indianapolis. Andy Reid. All right. It was Andy Reid's best game of the year. In the first quarter, there were 57 instances of Travis Kelce being run open. Throughout the whole game, this happened where you would see a guy in space, usually Travis Kelce, but you would see a guy in space and you would say, wow, he's open because he ran to where there was nobody else. or he ran to where there's nobody else because another guy ran and took some coverage with him, so it left Kelce open going across the middle, or whatever. I've been saying this whole season that is that's what Andy Reid has to do more often for any quarterback, but especially for Alex Smith, frankly. Alex Smith will deliver those passes 98% of the time. When a guy gets schemed open, I would say more often than not, Alex Smith will find that guy because he'll know where he's supposed to look. Alex Smith will find that guy who is schemed open. He will deliver that ball there, and the Chiefs will pick up a nice chunk of yardage because of it. For that to work, for the Chiefs' passing game to work, in my mind, Andy Reid has to hold up his end of the bargain, which is scheming guys open better. And for the first time this season, we saw that happen consistently. Guys were constantly being schemed open. So that is a gigantic gold star for Andy Reid in this game. But no, there's not a quarterback controversy. I don't really want to deal with that at all right now. Nick Foles can do some things better than Alex Smith. If you say, hey, I need you to throw a Hail Mary at the end of the game, who do you want to do it? Then Nick Foles is fine. If you want to say need a little bit of a change of pace, want to have a more aggressive, overall more aggressive offense, then you could have Nick Foles run it. I wouldn't have a huge problem with that argument. Nick Foles can maybe even create big plays more often. A couple of his best plays were not good throws. That throw to Tyreek Hill was not good. Tyreek Hill is good. One of the touchdowns was not a good throw, but it was made good by a good reception. I can't remember which one it was off the top of my head. Nick Foles had good plays. He had a very good game by the stat line, by the eyeball test, whatever. But if you remember even back to like the first time he came in for Alex Smith, he was making some terrible throws and he was missing some things. But he also made some good plays. It's not a quarterback controversy. Because by putting a more aggressive offense on the back of Nick Foles, you're going to be turning the ball over more aggressively. And Nick Foles does the small things worse. He might create big plays more often than Alex Smith does, but he will create big plays for the other teams, for defenses, consistently. Far more often than Alex Smith does. And that's not all. Because you might say, that's not even. I would rather have Brett Favre than Alex Smith. He's not Brett Favre. He's not any quarterback that is unrisk averse. He is limited. Severely limited. But with Andy Reid can use him to run this Chiefs offense every once in a while. Also, you're talking about a Colts team that had no intention of seeing Nick Foles. Nick Foles, who hasn't recorded any fresh game tape since like maybe a calendar year, depending on whenever he actually stopped playing for the Rams last year. There are a ton of small factors along the way where Nick Foles is not actually challenging Alex Smith to come back. Also, remember early on in the game with those plays with Travis Kelce, with Kelce being schemed open. Alex Smith was also creating some big plays, some very good plays, some effect. Those small chunk plays that I've been talking about for 4 months now or whatever. Alex Smith was only 9 for 19, but he had a touchdown and he threw for 127 yards there. Foles came in and was more effective and created more yardage. 16 completions on 22 attempts, 223 yards, 2 touchdowns. He was sacked twice. I understand that we as Chiefs fans have a constant thirst for a bigger armed quarterback, for a more franchise looking type of quarterback. Nick Foles was cut by the Rams this offseason. He couldn't beat out Case Keenum. Nick Foles is maybe the ideal backup for the Chiefs, for this version of the Chiefs with Andy Reid and with Alex Smith as the starter. And I think the Chiefs will beat the Jags next week, regardless of who starts at quarterback. I think Nick Foles would absolutely beat the Jags at Arrowhead, and I like Nick Foles as the backup for this team. But it's not a quarterback controversy. This is Alex Smith's team, and he's surrounded by talent to maximize him. Nick Foles took advantage of a very bad defense making very bad mistakes. In a lot of cases, that's all you can ask for. If Alex Smith did that consistently for a whole game, I would certainly still be praising Alex Smith, saying, Alex Smith did what you need him to do. He took advantage of mistakes made by a bad defense. That's Alex Smith. And yes, I would, and I hope you hear me saying that about Nick Foles also. That's what he does. But this is certainly Alex Smith's team. And I am, and also, more than just saying that as a fact, I will say from an opinion basis, I'm good with that. I'm glad for that. As this offense hits its stride, Alex Smith is going to look better and better every week. As Andy Reid begins to hold up his end of the bargain of scheming guys open more, of taking more advantage of the poor defenses, of the mistakes the defenses will make, of creating mistakes for the defenses to make, I think you're going to see Alex Smith absolutely thrive as soon as he gets back and gets back into the rhythm of this team. I'm very glad for what Nick Foles did in this game. He's not the quarterback of the future. He's not the quarterback of next week unless Alex Smith is too injured to return. And if he is, that's fine. Nick Foles can beat the Jags. Nick Foles might be able to beat the Buccaneers or the Panthers. But I want Alex Smith whenever the Chiefs have to go to Denver. Let's get into the actual kind of recap now, I suppose. Philip Gaines and Mitchell Schwartz were both active in this game. Jamal Charles and DJ White were not. That was all as was expected. Now, of course, we know that the Gaines and Schwartz both played tremendously all day. Charles out for the year, DJ White an unknown with his broken hand. The Chiefs started with the ball in the game here. First play, Smith went to Macklin about 20 yards downfield. It sailed over his head. Second and 10, play action, rolled right. Smith looked to DeAnthony Thomas at the first down marker. Incomplete. Then on third and 10, Smith hit Kelsey for the first down and 19 yards. As I've said for maybe 3 or 4 weeks in a row now, I don't mind Smith missing Macklin to open the game 20 yards downfield because defenses respect that and the Chiefs will keep trying it. It seems like Smith and Macklin have a hard time getting into a rhythm right out of the gate. If it goes first and 10, second and 10, and then on third and 10, it turns into a 19-yard gain, I will take that. That is fine by me. First down then for the Chiefs. Ware goes for one. And then on second and 9, Smith goes to Kelsey behind the line of scrimmage, and Kelsey had space to pick up the first. That's an instance when throwing the ball behind the line of scrimmage works for me. Travis Kelsey was in the right place for that pass, and everything was blocked appropriately. This is an instance of Andy Reid having the absolute right play set up there. First and 10, Smith took another deep shot to Macklin. Could not have been a better place to throw, but Vontae Davis got a hand on it. On second down, there was a funky, sweepy handoff thing to Tyreek Hill. It should have been a loss of 5, but it ended up being a gain of 7 because he is running with a constant turbo boost. Then on third and 3, rolling right, Smith hit Kelsey beyond the marker, and Kelsey took it for 15. This is an offense making strides already. Please don't tell me that Alex Smith would have not also scored 30 points if he was in this whole game, because I think he absolutely would have. Smith couldn't find anyone open after that, tried to run it, and slid late, and he took a shot to the head, and his head bounced off the ground. It was technically a sack, but obviously in this case the real loss was Smith going out. Foles entered the game, and I wrote at the time, said, I don't like this. Even if Smith comes back today, which I'm not expecting, he was in such a great rhythm, the whole offense was. And if you didn't know this already, the blow on Smith's head there was certainly his head bouncing off of the turf more than it was the actual impact of the hit up at the top. So the Nick Foles comes in and did the thing that I was afraid of, because Andy Reid in the red zone scares me, and Nick Foles coming in to an offense in rhythm scares me. Foles came in on second and 10, handed it off to Spencer Ware for 7, and then on third and 3, I was just staring at the TV with my laptop on my lap, just waiting for Nick Foles to throw a pass for some inexplicable reason, and he did. Third and 3, Foles dropped back, threw a pass. It was incomplete. It was super incomplete. He got hit. Santos came in and made a short field goal, made it 3-0 Chiefs. But man, I do really hate that. Although the Chiefs had a couple of short yardage runs in this game that didn't work either, so maybe that was just an issue of Nick Foles coming in super rusty. So the ball goes back to the Colts. There's a play action rolling right for Andrew Luck to start. A great play by Marcus Peters. He stuck with the target of the dump off until Luck closed in. Luck started to run up towards the line of scrimmage, and then Peters left his guy and then ran towards Luck to make sure Luck didn't run for anything. But then whenever Luck pulled up to actually make the pass, which was the plan the whole way along, Peters went up and batted the pass away, intended to go off to that dump off guy. Great play by Marcus Peters there. Veteran play there. Second and 10, incomplete to Dante Moncrief. Then on third and 10, Luck had all day. Eventually found T.Y. Hilton on Marcus Peters for a 40-yard catch and run. The reason he had all day was because of a holding penalty on Anthony Costanzo. Then it was third and 20, instead for the Colts. Quick pass to Philip Dorsett versus Marcus Peters, but he was given space. There was no risk there. It was stopped right after the catch, and the Colts punt it back to the Chiefs. The Chiefs and Dave Taub know that that punters and special teams units on the opposition fear their return guys. So DeAnthony Thomas and Tyreek Hill were both back to return. The Colts punted out of bounds. The Chiefs started at the 35-yard line. Ware took it for one, then Foles went to Demetrius Harris, who was... this play was awful. Demetrius Harris caught the dump-off pass and immediately started running backwards, and then he lost the ball after he went down. The refs figured it out. It was not a turnover. But that was hideous. Then it was 3rd and 13. Foles went to Macklin. The pass was broken up. The pass was there, but the defensive back got his hand between Macklin's hands, and the Chiefs have to punt back. At this point, my mindset was, if nothing else, the Chiefs have to feed Ware and at least give the defenses a break here, because Luck isn't going to waste every offensive opportunity. And I had some concerns about the defense being able to hold up without ever getting off the field. Well, this went sort of okay for the Chiefs, because right after this, Luck went to Dante Moncrief up on Eric Berry for 8 yards. Then on the next play in the shotgun, Andrew Luck just took his eyes off the snap. He bobbled it. Frank Gore ran into it, and Ramique Wilson covered the fumble. So the Chiefs recovered at the 23-yard line, and it looked like a nice break and maybe an easy 7 for the Chiefs. On first down, Foles got an easy throw on a nice route by Travis Kelce for 16, scheming him open again, getting to the 7-yard line. Then it was a perfect Nick Foles pass, and frankly, would have been a perfect route for Alex Smith. It was a low degree of difficulty on the pass, but Foles threw it perfectly accurately. That's the execution you can ask for there from your backup. First and goal from the 7, Foles goes through his reads, can't get to Kelce by the pylon, diving back from inside the end zone, incomplete there. Second down, a handoff to Ware, gets to the 5. Then on a third down, Nick Foles takes a sack, which drives me crazy. And also driving me crazy is the fact that all 3 snaps inside of the 10 were in the shotgun, and Foles didn't see Chris Conley open twice in the red zone. I just wanted them to run the ball, but they didn't. And then on the field goal, Santos knocked a 28-yard field goal right off the upright, which is, mind-numbing. He did kick the laces. Dustin Colquitt didn't get the ball turned around, but still, 28 yards, you should be able to pelvic thrust the ball through. Regardless, I was continually mind-boggled by how bad Andy Reid can be at calling plays in the red zone. It's hard for me to understand. Outside of the red zone all day, Andy Reid was stupendous, but inside the red zone, he constantly does things that I simply don't understand. Colts get the ball back after they missed a field goal. Frank Gore ran for 6, then Luck opened up by taking a deep shot at T.Y. Hilton. The pass was behind him, but if it was anywhere else, I think it would have gotten broken up. Incomplete there. 3rd and 4, Luck got pressured, but he ran for the first and slid. He got chipped by Phillip Gaines on the way down, which I thought was actually kind of dangerous for Gaines, just because I know the refs are probably keeping an eye out for any excuse to throw a flag on any quarterback hits after Smith went out. Then on 1st and 10, Luck went to Dorsett for a first. Next, the Colts wide receiver could not hold on to the pass. Nelson was in coverage. 2nd and 10, Luck dumped it off to Frank Gore for 7. Then on 3rd and 10, a great move by D. Ford. I mean, I might have said 3rd and 10. It was 3rd and 3. Whatever I said, ignore what I just said. On 3rd and 3, do remember that I said a great move by D. Ford. He stunted inside, the pocket closed in, and Ford cleaned it up for the sack. Really tremendous. The Colts punted, should have downed it at the 1. They didn't. It bounced into the end zone. Chiefs get the ball. Smith came out to the sideline to take some more snaps there, but Foles stayed in the game, and T.Y. Hilton walked off the field after clutching his hamstring on the play on that previous drive. A lot of injuries happening in this game. First down, Foles stepped around 2 nearly deadly pass rushers, and then Foles uncorked a moonshot in the general direction of Tyreek Hill, who was now apparently AJ Green, or is Calvin Johnson, who got hit by a shrink ray and is now living a second life as Tyreek Hill. It was incredible, an incredible play by Tyreek Hill for the 2nd week in a row. He found the ball, he went up, he got it, he held on. It was a 49-yard gain, all in the air. I run the pregame show on Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City, and Seren Petro is the host of that show. If you live in Kansas City, you know who he is. He hosts the show, and he's talked the last couple of weeks about, why don't we see more of those kind of plays to Chris Conley? And it makes sense. Chris Conley is the bigger, more physical guy. It makes sense to try to have Conley get some one-on-one, 50-50 kind of balls. But I don't think he ever gets open enough to justify these passes. And Tyreek Hill, for his his substandard size for a number one receiver in the NFL, or really anything other than a slot receiver in the NFL. For what he is having an incredible time locating the ball, creating separation, and then keeping separation as he goes to catch the ball. It was not a good throw. He stopped and turned around and went up and got it while being covered. I'm not going to see anything, actually. There is no until. Tyreek Hill has totally justified any of the deep targets he's gotten so far. I don't ever want to see those stop. Goes to the second quarter here. On second and seven, Foles went to Demetrius Harris for five, and then on third and two, it was kind of a crazy, like, full sprint, but at the line of scrimmage thing from Foles to where it wasn't really a screen, but it was bizarre. It was like a full sprint, line of scrimmage, immediate throw, kind of dangerous if Ware would have gotten matched up right up on a corner, but it opened up, and Ware picked up the first down. Then on first and ten, Ware goes for four. Second and six, Foles threw a 14-yard strike into the end zone to Travis Kelce, who just put on a great move and held onto the ball after getting cracked after the catch. Santos hits the extra point, and the touchdown makes it 10-0 Chiefs on a really stupendous drive there, going from the touchback all the way down for a touchdown. And on the touchdown, whenever Kelce got cracked after the catch, there was a personal foul. And so after the personal foul on the touchdown, the Chiefs had, you know, they're kicking it 15 yards closer to the Colts than they would have been before. So they tried an onside kick, and it didn't work. And the Colts got the ball and started on the 37-yard line. I understand the logic of that. I do. And my first thought, actually, when he got that penalty was, oh, well, maybe try some sort of, like, deep squib kind of thing, where maybe you get the ball in a weird bounce, or if nothing else, you know, you still pin them back. But the Colts offense up to this point was totally flat. They hadn't done anything yet. And giving them the ball at the 37-yard line was simply a risk I don't think I would have taken in that instance. And more often than not, I wish Andy Reid would be a little more risky, would be a little more liberal, play a little more fast and loose occasionally. But this is an instance where I don't think I was on board with it. It was less of a risk. It was 15 yards less of a risk than it was to do it from your original kickoff point. And if you want to do the math of this way, I suppose, if you compare it to being a touchback, the Chiefs lost 12 yards on the onside kick. That's not bad. That's not bad at all. If the Chiefs kick it out of the back of the end zone, which is what usually happens after a 15-yard penalty, Santos kicks it to the uprights, the Colts get the ball on the 25. In this case, you say maybe you have a 15% chance of getting the onside kick in a surprise instance as they did here. A 15% chance of getting it, maybe 20% chance. And the worst case scenario is you give up an extra 12 yards compared to kicking it out of the back of the end zone. That's not bad. That's okay. I can live with that math. I wasn't as furious about the onside kick as a lot of people were on Twitter. At the same time, I think I would have probably tried to have played your odds a little better by doing one of those kind of like deep squib kick kind of things, or maybe if the ball bounces around a little bit, you have a chance, or kicking it just super high in the air. Let your coverage get down there as quickly as you can while the ball was just having crazy amounts of hang time. Make the guy catch the kickoff on the 10 and hopefully be surrounded by your entire coverage team. That's what I was expecting more than anything, if not the deep squib. Anyway, there was a lot of talk about the onside kick. Ultimately, I think the logic was okay. The risk was okay. It didn't work here. And I don't think I would have done it in this instance just because the Colts offense had been totally anemic up to this point. First down, Frank Gore ran for 11. Second and 8, Luck had all day and found the tight end for a 16-yard gain. More pressure on the next play, but Luck hit Jack Doyle for 16 more. Then on second down, Luck got pressured, checked it to Frank Gore. Derek Johnson got run over, and Gore rolled it all the way into the end zone. Touchdown Colts, 10-7 Chiefs at this point. And I said I was not afraid of Frank Gore, and somebody tweeted me after the touchdown, I'm still not afraid of Frank Gore. Frank Gore on the day had 9 carries for 37 yards on the ground, and had 2 receptions for 25 yards in the air and a touchdown. I was right to not fear Frank Gore. I will not take any flack for not fearing Frank Gore. The Chiefs get the ball back after the touchdown. Tyreek Hill brings it out of the end zone and gets hit at the 10-yard line, ends up getting back to the 15. Smith returns, hands the ball out to West, stretches to the sideline for two, then West again goes for seven. On third and one, Sherman led to the left for Ware and just totally got stuffed. They brought in an extra offensive lineman, they brought in the fullback and gave it to Ware. Six linemen, fullback lead, Ware gets the ball. That's everything that you generally want Andy Reid to do on third and one. In this case, it just didn't work. The offense just lost. They lost that matchup. I wasn't furious about that. That was the right call. Your guys just didn't make it happen there. So that was discouraging. The Chiefs punt, but it was okay. Great coverage on the punt, by the way, by Demetrius Robinson, forcing a muffed punt. Andy recovered it. T.Y. Hilton returned to the field as well here. Then Gore goes for five, then for three. Then on third and two, Robert Turbin came in and converted. Luck took a hit in the pocket, but still found Philip Dorsett on the next play, who dove for three. Nice pressure by D. Ford again. The next play, perfect pressure from D. Ford and Tom Bahali. If you watch this game, I think you'll remember what it was. It looked like Tom Bahali and Justin Houston in their primes. Like that kind of perfect, where Tomba caved in on his tackle, D. Ford caved in on his, and they just met in the middle, wrapping up Andrew Luck. It was so, so good. That's something I haven't seen in so long with the Chiefs, and maybe in football. I mean, it's to me, maybe I'm just a sucker for pass rushes. I don't know. But that's one of, like, the most satisfying plays in football, whenever both of your edge rushers arrive at the quarterback at the same time. It was beautiful. And then on third and 17, Luck ran for 10, but slid before Derek Johnson could hit him. Colts punt, Tyreek Hill fair catches it. Then on first down, Smith puts it a little too high for Travis Kelce, and Kelce was open, and overthrowing it nearly turned into a pick there. That was bad news. That play was no bueno. Second and 10, Smith avoided a sack by dumping it down to West for five. Third and five, Smith found open Travis Kelce again through an easy open strike. Kelce turned it up for 21 yards. That's the kind of money they got to be making on this offense, regardless of the quarterback, but Alex Smith can do it just as well as Nick Foles can. First and 10, a short pass to Demetrius Harris was dropped. He has been low-key terrible all year long. He had a touchdown later on that we'll talk about. I think it was a touchdown. Or got to the one. I can't remember. He had a great play later on that we'll talk about. But he has really struggled this year for the most part. Third and 10, false start on Jeremy Maclin. Third and 15, Smith's pass was batted down at the line of scrimmage by T.Y. McGill, who is simply a giant heap of a man. And the Chiefs are forced to punt. And it was a really... It was a miserable way to end an offensive drive. Because as they were moving the ball with that pass to Kelce, then the Chiefs went drop, false start, pass batted down. The best thing that happened in that sequence was that Colquitt's punt rolled out of the 5-yard line. But without any help, it was Dustin Colquitt's a wizard still. Colts get the ball back. Luck hit Moncrief for 15, and the 2-minute warning arrived. First and 10 from just past the 20. Tomba gave a little bit of chase. Luck ran for 8. Then on 2nd and 3, Tomba got to Luck, but Luck missed Moncrief. 3rd and 3, the Chiefs sent pressure. Luck found a wide-open T.Y. Hilton, but threw it really hard and a little behind and above him, and Hilton could not bring it in, which was great, which is a nice little perk for a Chiefs defense that might not have deserved that break, and the Colts have to punt it back. And again, this is, even after giving them good field position, having it turned into that touchdown earlier, the Chiefs defense holding up extremely well here. Didn't even expect them to continue to hold up this well. Expected Andrew Luck to come back a little bit. And that never happened. So, good news. Colts punt. Hill catches it at the 15, breaks a few tackles, gets up to the 28-yard line after running around a bunch. The Chiefs had all three timeouts here. One of them to try to throw themselves into some points because they've been throwing the ball so much already on the day. Smith hit Conley on a slant for 9. Smith went to West out of the backfield, who took it for a really nice gain of 18 and got out of bounds. But Mitchell Schwartz got called for a hold, which is infuriating. And then 2nd and 11, Smith gets hit, can't get it to Maclin. 3rd and 11, Smith throws a dart through coverage at Maclin. The ball gets batted down and falls incomplete. The Chiefs punt, and now the Colts have all three timeouts from the 29-yard line. This is looking like a really poor way to end the half for a Chiefs team that still feels like they've given the Colts offense plenty of chances to come back because the offense hadn't done much of its own. So the Colts have all three timeouts from the 29, and Andrew Luck gives it right back. A stupendous play on a comeback route by Philip Gaines for the interception. It was a bad choice by Luck, but such a good move by Gaines to get in there. The Chiefs now have the ball at the 36 with 38 seconds and three timeouts. The momentum totally changed on that. So a delayed kind of screen by Smith to Ware in space turned into a gain of 23 for Spencer Ware. Chiefs call a timeout with 28 seconds left. First and 10 from the 14. Smith put the ball right on Macklin's right hand in the end zone, but Macklin couldn't get a second hand on it. It was a superb throw. I mean, the nose of the ball was in Macklin's right hand. And with the gloves that the NFL receivers have and, you know, Macklin's second hand that he could have maybe used to catch the ball, I think it should have been a touchdown. It wasn't a drop, per se, but I think it should have been completed. It would have been a hard catch, but it should have been completed. Thankfully, though, it didn't actually come back to bite the Chiefs. Second and 10, Smith goes to Macklin again, this time right over his shoulder in the end zone for a touchdown, 17-7 Chiefs. This, for as miserable as the play calling was before the punt, this was a tremendous set of play calls there. Andy Reid needed Phillip Gaines' help, but Reid completely got that one right. And Smith was perfect on those three plays. Good choices, great throws, well-schemed routes, and great calls by Andy Reid. It was a tremendous way to end the half there. And the Chiefs go into halftime up 17-7. We're at 50 minutes into the show, and I am at halftime of the game. This is probably going to be the longest episode of Reffing the Kicker ever. Anyway, halftime came and went, and the Colts came back firing, drove past the 40-yard line, but on 3rd and 7, Luck overthrew Dante Moncrief, streaking down the field, and the Colts had to punt. Chiefs started the 25 after a nice return from Tyreek Hill. Spencer Ware entered concussion protocol as well at this point in the game, and Vontae Davis was ruled out with a concussion. Both of them, obviously, did not return. 2nd and 8, Smith goes to Tyreek Hill for 11, but Parker Anger went down on the play, and Fulton came into the game. And that was when Anger was ruled out so quickly. That seemed to be an obvious severe knee injury. Now we know he's out for the season. Then after that, it was a play action for Smith. He rolled out and ran for 8 and then slid earlier. So far, so good. Then on the next play, it's a read option that he slid where he slid, and it was like a designed run for Smith, which was at the time completely infuriating and confusing. He gets a hand to the head, which knocks his head into the turf, bounces back up. This time is obviously, I mean, the first one seemed to be an obvious concussion. This one even more so. I already covered that in the intro, or at least in the first segment, as to my thoughts on that now at this point, based off of Mellinger's column. But that was infuriating and upsetting, frankly. Foles comes back in, plays the rest of the game. 3rd and 1 there, West picks up the first down, and the Chiefs get to 3rd and 3. West gets through the first and a lot more, a 33-yard run that was pulled all the way back on a block in the back call on DeAnthony Thomas. I feel like I'm earning a reputation for having a few things drive me specifically insane in football, and this is one of them. Don't push guys in the back. Just don't do it. You're going to get caught. NFL refs are so touchy about blocks in the back. You've just got to not do it. Everyone will be happier because of it. 1st and 10 from the 35. Foles gets a Tyreek Hill for a couple, though. 2nd and 9, Foles throws a dart to a wide-open Tyreek Hill for a 34-yard touchdown. This was, tremendous. It was a great scheme. Another instance of a great scheming a guy open kind of route. Great scheme, great throw, easy catch. I was still pissed and worried about Alex Smith and Spencer Ware, and I'm still pissed and worried about Alex Smith and Spencer Ware. Mostly worried now, because especially, I didn't see when Ware left. Smith leaving the game in the way that he did, watching him leave the game, was, like, genuinely upsetting. Because you're watching a guy who you go, oh, that dude just had his second brain injury in 30 minutes. His brain is oatmeal. Like, I don't know. It was hard to watch. And I mean, and I don't find it all that hard to watch to see other kinds of injuries generally. But now with what we know about concussions and CTE, to see a guy get his apparent second concussion in half an hour and then wobble off the field is just really hard to watch. So that actually kind of was casting a shadow over that drive for me, but it was a great drive by Nick Foles and Andy Reid for the most part, and then wrapped up by Tyreek Hill. So the Chiefs are up at this point 24-7. You got to be feeling really good at this point, and the Chiefs gave up a little bit back here, but it was never terrifying at least. The Colts opened up with a 20-yard pickup. Luck ran for 7. Daniel Sorensen stuffed Gore on 2nd and short. On 3rd and 2, Turbin picked up the first down again. Smith was officially ruled out at this point of the game. There's some nice plays and some nice plays by the Colts and some chief penalties helped the Colts march down the field. Luck took a shot from Dontari Poe in the red zone, but Gore got him inside the 5 for first and goal. First and goal from the 3. Luck goes to Dante Moncrief for the touchdown. Moncrief got up above Steven Nelson. Andrew Luck avoided Dontari Poe up the middle, and that was the touchdown that made it 24-14. Obviously the last points of the game, though, for the Colts. Then the Chiefs get the ball back. West goes up the middle for no gain, and then Foles airs it out to Conley, who gets completely open after the defensive back falls down. And again, this wasn't a great play, but it was Foles and Conley took advantage of it. Conley stumbled down after the catch and still got 33 yards out of it. If it was a better throw, it was probably a touchdown. On second down, Foles lofted another one down the sidelines. Kelce located it and hauled it in for 37. It was beautiful. It was ruled a catch, and the Colts challenged it. Kelce was looking over his inside, or his right shoulder, and then had to turn around, flipped his head, and found it over his left shoulder and hauled it in. It was amazing, and I'm pretty confident I would have called it a catch. But after further review, it was ruled incomplete, and I feel like for me, the review made it more clear that it was a catch. Gabe DiArmond on Twitter had a tweet that said, "Here's the problem. If Kelce makes that same play in the middle of the field, it's a fumble." And I think that's a great way to put it. If it would have been a fumble in the field of play, if it would have been a catch and a fumble, it should be a catch and then a dropped ball or whatever, a put-down ball out of bounds. Regardless, no one understands what a catch is in the NFL, and that, to me, all the way looked like a catch. 3rd and 6, Foles had a rusher from his blind side come at him untouched. The Chiefs go into the fourth quarter, and the Chiefs punt it then. Indy muffs the punt again, but Dorsett recovers it. Then they had to re-punt because it didn't line up correctly, but it didn't really matter. Luck went deep and missed on offense, and Chris Jones just made a home in the pocket, wrapped up Luck for a sack. It was the Chiefs' 3rd sack of the day. Watching the replay of this was incredible. Have some optimism, Chiefs fans, about Chris Jones. He took an NFL guard and just tossed him like a child. It was remarkable. And then it was 3rd and 17. Luck had all day, ran for 13, and the Colts punted it back. Tyreek Hill turned nothing into a 28-yard return. Then West ran for 7 and then 2. And then on 3rd and 1, the Chiefs called the timeout, and Foles passed it on 3rd and 1. But Travis Kelce got held, and it was incomplete. But Travis Kelce got held going across the middle. The Chiefs got lucky and got the first down there. Then a quick pass to the line of scrimmage with no clear screen blocking for Conley went to Conley, and he carried a defender for 17 yards, and he carried the defender for all of those 17 yards. Another nice play by Chris Conley, followed up by a more obvious screen to Jeremy Maclin for 2. Second down was a play-action screen to Tyreek Hill for 4. Then on 3rd and 4, Demetrius Harris absolutely elevated and extended, hauling in a really tough catch going down at the 1. So that was not a touchdown, as I mentioned earlier, but it was a great play for Demetrius Harris. I mean, really like textbook. Going up with one hand, extending, reaching out, pulling it in with both. Fantastic play. 1st and goal, Dontari Poe comes in, and the Colts get through Poe and Sherman and everyone to wrap up Charcandrick West. 2nd and goal from the 4, Foles had West wide open out of the backfield and just threw it over him. Now, I mean, that was like a high school kind of throw. That was horrendous. That was a Nick Foles mistake that Alex Smith doesn't make. 3rd and goal, Foles went to Conley, double covered in the corner of the end zone. That didn't work. They ate up some clock and ended up in points, but it should have been 4 more points. 22-yard field goal was good. 27-14, Chiefs. The long drive was the most important thing there, but again, should have made it. Should have added another touchdown on that drive. 1st down for the Colts. A pass was batted down at the line of scrimmage. 2nd down, more pressure. Luck picked up maybe a yard. 3rd down, pass to T.Y. Hilton was incomplete. And somewhere in that sequence, Dottie Nicholas showed up and made some noise. I'm not sure where it was. I missed it somehow. That was at 8:10 working. I guess that's how. But he got held and almost had a sack, apparently, according to my Twitter timeline. I didn't see it, but my mentions lit up because you guys love Dottie Nicholas, which I'm good. I'm glad you do because I think he also has a future on this defense. And the Colts punt it back there. Hill fair catches it. The Chiefs get the ball with 7 minutes left. West got up holding his hip for a moment, which was terrifying because then Anthony Sherman lined up next to Foles in the running back spot. Malcolm got a bubble screen on the next play. He hurdled a pile of humanity, stretched it out for 28 yards, one trip up away from a giant touchdown. And then West returned. That play, I think, was like the youngest that I feel like Jeremy Maclin has looked in a long, long time. The hurdle, the run. It looked like a youthful Jeremy Maclin for the first time in a while. Right now, for me, I've had a hard time kind of seeing Jeremy Maclin in Kansas City as Jeremy Maclin in his prime on any level. It kind of feels like Jeremy Maclin's the end of Jeremy Maclin's career. It's a feeling. I can't even prescribe that as actually how it is, but it's kind of the feeling that I get, and it's disappointing. I don't like that. And this was a case where it was like, oh, I can see Jeremy Maclin being youthful again here. Second and 10 was a handoff to D'Anthony Thomas. Third and 7, Foles threw it away, and he should have taken the sack to let the clock run, but defensive holding gave the Chiefs a first down, a nice break again there. Then two negative running plays used up the Colts' last two timeouts. Third and 13, a handoff to West went for 9, which got the Chiefs into field goal range. Santos came out for the field goal. They had to use a timeout to get it set up, but whatever, they made it. 44-yard attempt was good. The field goal made it 30-14, the final score of the game. But the Colts came back out on offense. Daniel Sorensen single-handedly knocked the ball out of Philip Dorsett's arms on a solo tackle, which was like a tackle in space. He forced the fumble, which was great, but Dorsett recovered it. Then Dee Ford took Luck down on the next play. 2.5 sacks on the day for Dee Ford. Then Luck ran for 17 yards on fourth down, hitting the 2-minute warning. Then the Colts had a giant touchdown called back on a hold, and a great deep catch was dropped after great coverage from Philip Gaines. They converted the 3rd and 20 to T.Y. Hilton. Frank Zombo came in and got the 5th sack of the day, and then Dee Ford got the 6th. 3.5 sacks on the day for Dee Ford, and there were only 10 guys on the field whenever he got it. A really nice exclamation point on the end of the day for Dee Ford. 3.5 sacks. His development has continued nicely. The Chiefs get out of Indianapolis with their 3rd straight victory after the bye week, a 30-14 win in Indianapolis. The longest show in this show's history probably just got longer. Nick Foles has been ruled the starter on Sunday. This just happened as I'm recording this show right now. Alex Smith ruled out. Alex Smith, who passed the concussion protocol twice on Sunday, is not playing with lumps on his head and a gash in his ear. It was not enough to keep him out on Sunday. He passed the concussion protocol twice and is out. Spencer Ware did not pass and has not been ruled out for the game yet. This is a lot. This is strange. I'm having a hard time with this. And again, it's happening right now. So I'm trying to piece together what is actually going on. But so, Sam Ehlinger said that he's not playing because of the concussions and the gash ear and everything, but the Alex Smith is, quote, absolutely asymptomatic from the concussion, so he's having no concussion symptoms. But at the same time, he's not playing on Sunday, and also, he's not even the backup. There's no way he plays on Sunday. He's going to be inactive because Tyler Bray has ruled the backup. I'm glad for Smith's health that he's out in this game. I would want him to be as healthy as possible going forward. Maybe this is the Chiefs flipping off the Jags. But he's out, and Foles will be fine, but it's an odd way to go about it here. And Brandon Kylie on Twitter tweeted something that I didn't want to read, but says, you know, am I reading too much into this, or do the Chiefs kind of sound like they want to know what Nick Foles looks like here? I think it's more that the Chiefs want Alex Smith to have his time. I really do think that. And also, Smith had a press conference and apparently sounded good and everything. So, like, he's really, like, firing on all cylinders, it sounds like. But I'm just scrolling through Twitter right now trying to figure out what exactly is going on here. Nick Foles starting is fine. I think they beat Jacksonville either way. Tyler Bray being the backup is terrifying, but whatever. I think there are probably 50 quarterbacks in football who could win a game against the Jags in Andy Reid's system with like a whole season of practicing for it. Like, I think you might have been able to give me Kevin Hogan or Aaron Murray in this game, and I think they beat the Jags. But it's kind of bizarre. Alex Smith, according to BJ Kissel here, Alex Smith adding that it's not like something didn't happen. But he doesn't believe that it was a concussion, adding that he passed everything. So, I'm not really sure what they think happened. But also, Ben Almquist, this is during, because Alex Smith and Andy Reid are both having press conferences today. Ben Almquist at Citadel Chief says Smith has been cleared by 3 independent neurosurgeons now, one on game day, one by the impact test, and one at the team facility. But he's already been ruled out on Sunday. I'm kind of having a hard time figuring out how to take this, because I think obviously they have confidence in Nick Foles. I think they frankly don't fear the Jags, which is fair, which is understandable. And I think Nick Foles will do just fine. But I don't really want to have I don't really want to have a super pass-heavy offense, as Spencer Ware still is not past concussion protocol, won't practice today, according to BJ Kissel. I think it's a good insight again from Ben Almquist here. If a guy can be rested to protect slash recover his knee, then why not his head? Smith still took hard shots, concussion or not. And that's fine. That's a measured, nuanced response. I think Andrew might have a little bit of curiosity about having to deal. We're seeing how Nick Foles plays. Maybe I'll indulge 10% of that. I'm going to say right now, though, this is 90% about protecting Alex Smith in a game the Chiefs are going to win either way, in the mind of the Chiefs. I think that's how they're looking at it here. Let's go ahead and go to the takes and takeaways now from after the Colts game. I have to scroll through my mentions for like a mile here because everything that just happened, we're going to see what we can find out here from what you took away from this game. Let's go ahead and start off with Jamie Jackson at JJ_Chiefs on Twitter, who is determined to burn me on something that I will not be burned on. Said, I love your show, thank you, but it's time to admit letting Sean Smith walk was the correct choice. He is permatoast slash injured in Oakland. I like permatoast. Oh, that's good. It's a funny phrase. He is not permatoast, or would not be permatoast, in Kansas City. If Philip Gaines would stay healthy for the whole season, then I would totally be cool with letting Sean Smith not be a thing anymore. I also think Eric Berry's impact is still severely overvalued. He's not worth the $11 million he's getting paid. And if Sean Smith were to have to not have changed systems and would have stayed in the exact system he was in last year with the Chiefs, I still think he would be very, very effective. Also, with the Chiefs, he would not have gotten a long-term deal with my plan. He would have gotten a franchise tag for 1 year. And then Philip Gaines' injury would not have become an issue. It would not have been an issue early on in the season. It would not be an issue anytime it happens now. He would be the third guy who would be developing and getting healthy for next season, for the first year of Gaines and Peters, with DJ White, Steven Nelson, etc., filling in the gaps. And Philip Gaines would still be covering the slot in all likelihood, too. I stand by this. I feel like a presidential candidate trying to not backtrack on a stance, because I actually believe this. I still would have rather franchise tag Sean Smith than Eric Berry. I wouldn't have given either guy a long-term deal, though. I'm gonna stay with that. I'm gonna keep that in my. I'd rather have gambled on that money for Sean Smith and then have brought in some other safety depth elsewhere. From Austin Hall, I said, is there a running back controversy now? There can't be. There's just too much talent. And also, this was before Jamal Charles was put on IR, so that's depressing. I didn't mean to get sad so quickly. That was a funny question. Just because Ware and West can both carry the team, Bishop Sankey's had actual meaningful carries. I don't know where Darian Reeves is. He should be here. From Keyshawn Brown, can Foles be considered the quarterback of the future for the Chiefs, or would that be Bray or a draft pick? No, he cannot. I don't think Foles will be on this team next year, with his current contract at least. He has a team option next year for $11 million. The Chiefs are not going to pay Nick Foles $11 million next year. There's no chance. I mean, he could have 12 touchdowns against the Jags on Sunday. And I'm not sure that he would even ever get another snap above Alex Smith, except for whenever Alex Smith is injured. No, he's not the quarterback of the future. He couldn't stay on the field for the Rams. He is not the quarterback of the future. He's the backup of right now. Tyler Bray, I also don't think, is the quarterback of the future. I think if he was, we would have seen it by now. If the Chiefs had confidence in him, they wouldn't have gone and signed Nick Foles. Tyler Bray would have been the backup for now and the quarterback of the future. The quarterback of the future for the Chiefs, the next quarterback that's going to win a playoff game for the Chiefs, in my mind, other than Alex Smith, is not on the roster right now. Also from Keyshawn Brown, is Dee Ford finally developed into a solid draft pick within these last couple of games? Is he going to take over for Tom Bahali? He has shown sparks, and he's done it against some bad offensive lines, although bad offensive lines that have blocked for really good quarterbacks and overall good high scoring offenses. He's been good. He has shown sparks. I want to see it happen more consistently. I'm not in a place of like total I don't feel like Dee Ford is in a wasteland right now. I think if Justin Houston does come back healthy, that Tom Bahali and Dee Ford will do most of the rotating. Although, especially early on, whenever Justin Houston's getting up to speed, all three of those guys are going to rotate. I'm very happy with the development that we've seen from Dee Ford in the last few weeks. It can't stop here, though. From Mike Thomas, He was talking about Niall Davis and saying that since we won't get a draft pick for him, I hope we claim him tonight. The Chiefs did not end up claiming Niall Davis. They still have some roster spots now. We'll see how that ends up going. From Blake McFarland at TheBlakeMC on Twitter, is Foles a better fit for the read offense than Alex Smith? No, I don't think he is. I think it's because he is less risk-averse and is a whole lot less careful with the ball, not usually in a productive kind of way. He's usually less careful with the ball in the kind of way that turns into a lot of turnovers, and that will drive Andy Reid insane. I think he's an ideal backup in Andy Reid's system, or at least is a perfectly fine starter, an average starter for a system. Alex Smith, for the most part, is exactly what Andy Reid wants. In my mind, Andy Reid could use someone a little riskier than Alex Smith, but he has to have all of the same traits that Alex Smith does. And Nick Foles, at this point, for when he is riskier, it occasionally can turn out well. He will miss too many easy throws. He will make too many small mistakes and then make too many big mistakes also with his own character in ways where he is worse than Alex Smith at the little things, and whenever he is taking big risks, they swing both ways too often for Andy Reid to have any patience with him. Eddie Eames on Twitter had an interesting comment during the Alex Smith concussions. He said, I've been saying it all day, if the Army can figure out when to pull soldiers from combat for concussions, so can the NFL. And I just thought that was kind of interesting, especially as we figure out how Alex Smith cleared the concussion protocol twice, but won't play on Sunday, getting a day off, which is fine. I'm still cool with that. I'm cool with giving him a break as if you're resting a high ankle sprain. But it's kind of crazy to see an NFL quarterback voluntarily get rested. And also, for a brain injury, it just doesn't happen very often. And I think NFL teams treat it as very binary, as, you know, either you have a concussion and you can't play, or you had one and now you're good to go. Giving him some time is fine with me. But also Spencer Ware now. I thought that was interesting because it's pointing towards the question of how is the NFL so bad at this? How is this going so poorly? How are the concussion protocols so varied and so nonsensical in some ways? From Ty DeClaire, at Ty DeClaire 44, listening to these reporters trying to make a quarterback controversy out of this is making me almost as frustrated as Reid right now. You're going to have to get used to it, man, you and me both, because this week, if Nick Foles plays well against the Jags, which I think he probably will, this next week is going to be miserable. From Reggie Flinnery, at Reggie Comedy, he was tweeting and pointing out that D Ford is now tied for third in the NFL with 7 sacks. That's amazing. And I'm happy for that. Again, happy for 7 sacks in what, 8 games now? For 7 games. 7 sacks in 7 games. I don't know how I didn't know that off the top of my head. 7 sacks in 7 games for D Ford is something I'm very happy to see. He still has a long way to develop to become, like, an actual consistent force. But he's getting there. It's great. Justin Henderson tweeted and was making fun of my prediction, saying, 28-17, do you know anything about the Chiefs or the Colts' weapons? It was 30-14. Thank you, Justin, for reminding me of how good I was going into this game, man. I am such a prognosticator. I am the NFL Puxatani Phil over here. From Samir Hinduja on Twitter at Hinduja, which I think I'm saying okay, Samir. If I'm not, I'm sorry. I'm a mess. How did Fulton do when subbing in for Parker Anger? Did D Ford actually get binned? Who gets the game balls? And who are you rooting for in the Oakland-Denver game? And why? The best thing the NFL guards can do more often than not is to be forgotten, and I didn't see I didn't see Zach Fulton get beat one time. So I'm going to sign off on the Zach Fulton experience. I've been doing that since his rookie year. D Ford, he actually showed up most strongly later in the game. The play where he definitely did get binned was that play I talked about earlier where he and Tomba met at Andrew Luck. That was stupendous. That was a time when he definitely did get the bend we've been looking for so long. The game balls in this game, I would like to say go to Nick Foles and maybe D Ford. I'm not going to do that in either direction. I think Andy Reid and Andy Reid's use of Travis Kelce might earn him a game ball. Charkandrick West coming in to clean up the game at the end, he might have earned a game ball there. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else that comes to the front of my mind, kind of a less praised member of the team who might deserve. Who might deserve a special shout out on that. Oh, I love Philip Gaines. I love Philip Gaines all the time. So you can give Philip Gaines one if you'd like. But that's a good question. I might start trying to do that more consistently, delivering game balls to the specific stars of the game, or maybe the most underrated stars of the game. And I am going to be rooting for the Oakland Raiders in this game on Sunday Night Football this week. The Raiders are 6-2, and the Broncos are 6-2. The reason I'm rooting for the Raiders, dear God, don't ever say that sentence. The reason I'm rooting for the Raiders is because the Chiefs already have a leg up on the Raiders. They've already beaten them head-to-head. Either way, this game is going to be kind of good news and bad news for the Chiefs. They have to take care of the Jags at home. But I would like to see the Raiders take care of business at home for them. Maybe they split their home-and-home series. That would be ideal, I would think, at this point. But especially right now for the Chiefs, we don't know how the Chiefs are going to fare against the Broncos. At worst, the Chiefs are going to split with the Raiders. And also, I think I'm generally less afraid of the Raiders right now. I think the Raiders are a little bit more of a mirage than the Broncos are, although I'm not terribly afraid of either of these teams right now. The Broncos have a quarterback I don't believe in. The Raiders have a defense and, to some extent, a coach that I don't necessarily believe in. The Broncos have the coaching and the defense, but not the quarterback. If you put Derek Carr on the Broncos, then the league is over. But at this point, I'm a little less afraid of the Raiders, who, you know, they beat the Chargers, then they lost to the Chiefs, and then they won at Jacksonville and won at Tampa Bay in overtime, having the most penalties in the history of the NFL. For a little bit of an AFC West recap there, and the Broncos won last week against the Chargers in Denver. I'm a little more afraid of what the Broncos can do because I think their defense can be so good that they can cover up more of their ills than the Raiders can. From Thomas Harrell, his takeaway, Macklin and Kelsey at 376 and 377 yards, Conley at 286, Hill at 223. Who, if any, get to 1,000 yards? The passing game is looking good. Also, go D Ford. That's a really interesting question that I didn't even like see during the game. I'm seeing it now for the first time. Who gets to 1,000 yards of anyone? I mean, obviously at the current pace, no one does. I'm having a hard time seeing Macklin get there this year. And I don't remember what I said before the year. I think I probably projected him getting 1,000 yards this year. I might have even said that for Travis Kelce. I definitely don't think Conley or Hill do. Although Hill, like next year as a sneaky fantasy play might be interesting. At this point, I don't think any of those guys are going to get to 1,000 yards. I think we could see Macklin and Kelce both sort of start to sniff it if Andy Reid does continue to use them as I think he should. But the pace that both of those guys would have to be on to actually pick up enough yards to get to 1,000, I don't think the Chiefs have a 1,000-yard receiver this year. From Derek Vaughn, D Ford makes a difference again. The guy's playing great. Is it time for people to start giving this? Oh, it is time for people to start giving this man some credit. D Ford is now tied for third in the NFL with 7 sacks, only trailing Lorenzo Alexander of Buffalo and Von Miller of Denver. Yes, talking about D Ford is great right now. And I hope that my sort of like reserved thrills about D Ford aren't coming off as like a slight to him. It's been so long since we haven't seen anything really encouraging. Starting to see some things that are encouraging. I still feel like we're not seeing him be constantly disruptive enough for me to be super duper stoked, but we are seeing the highlights now, which is nice. Also from Derek Vaughn at D_Vaughn88 on Twitter. If we keep Gaines healthy and get Houston back, we may have the number one defense in the league. I would say top five. Yeah. If Justin Houston comes back and looks like Justin Houston and Philip Gaines stays healthy, two big ifs. Two things that definitely might not happen. But if both of those things do happen, then yeah, I'd say this is a top five defense for sure. Keyshawn Brown again, hell of the day for Chris Jones. Yes, the pressure up the middle is enormous. That's a takeaway that I also had from this game, where we should be excited about Chris Jones. From Ty DeClaire, seeing KC shut down 3 good offenses, you got to think this defense is a few key pieces away from being one of the best in football. Yes, I do, 100%. That if Gaines staying healthy, bringing back Justin Houston, 100%. I would love to see Alan Bailey return. He's not going to return, but I would love to see this defense with Alan Bailey to see if it would step even another step forward. But if Gaines can stay healthy and Houston can come back healthy, then yes, I 100% do. From Matthew Livingston at Matrix System on Twitter. That's funny. That's a good Twitter handle. That's exactly why we went to get Foles. Defense was stellar. Hope Alex is okay. Feel unsatisfied after that win. That I totally understand. That it totally makes sense to me. Because I'm very, very satisfied with how the team played. I'm very satisfied with the victory. But I have kind of an unsettling feeling about how it went for Smith and for Spencer Ware. So I totally understand that direction coming from Matthew. From Kevin T. Priester at KT Priest. Decisions being made by Andy continue to frustrate me. The onside kick, the read option after the quarterback injury, and not activating Darren Reeves. Why? I don't know. From Jared Dunn, at Jared A. Dunn, most complete game of the season. Those two first and goals were maddening with a play calling. Loved the ball. Saw some air. from Keyshawn again. Need to get Ware and Alex back healthy. The backups did a nice job, but those two are super important parts to us getting deep into the playoffs. From Miles, at Miles McLaren, the Chiefs are making me believe again. I hope Ford keeps improving so Casey can benefit even more once Houston comes back. I would love to see those guys come back and come all together. From Keyshawn again, Foles, deep shots, Tyreek, huge, Kelsey, welcome back, Ford, keep going, offensive line, nice job, defense, again, Andy, let the playbook spread, open, and win. A lot of takes in one tweet, that was good, that is some concise tweeting. Also more from D. Ford. Last takeaway of the day from Ty Declare, could Tyreek Hill be Dante Hall reincarnated, or am I just drinking the Kool-Aid? Alright, I'm going to say some heretical stuff here, and you guys are going to have to hold me accountable, you guys are going to have to send me to whatever the governing body of like Chiefs theology is. I'm gonna need to atone for my heresies. I think Tyreek Hill is gonna be a bigger part of the offense than Dante Hall ever was. Dante Hall was an unbelievable return man who, from my memory, which is certainly flawed, Dante Hall was never a gigantic part of the passing game. Never what we thought he could have been. He could have had some I'm trying to go to his stats right now. He could have had some more success in space, but to look at his targets, even in 2002 he had 35 targets, then 60, then 38, 51, 40, 12, and 18 in his last 2 years in St. Louis. His yards receiving for the Chiefs in his entire Chiefs career, playing 16 games every year except for his last one, he played 15 games. 322, 423, 230, 436, 204. Tyreek Hill is already, he's on pace to have a better offensive season than Dante Hall ever did. So for that, Tyreek Hill is beyond what Dante Hall is. Now, I don't think we're going to see him have the kind of kick return career, touchdown-wise, that we saw from Dante Hall. But even then, whenever you start to like actually look at his touchdown return numbers, it is like in 2003, he had two punt return touchdowns, two kick return touchdowns. He was extremely effective, yards per return and everything. But those are achievable numbers. It's crazy that Dante Hall had 10,000 career return yards. Just in kickoff returns. That's amazing. Dante Hall was great. He's one of the most fun players I've ever seen. I think Tyreek Hill's already on pace to have a better offensive career than Dante Hall did. And I think he's going to be an extremely effective returner for a long time. So I'm going to go ahead and try to be as unheretical as possible, to commit as few heresies as possible, and say, maybe so. A really shockingly long episode of the Ref and the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, thoroughly exhausted and thoroughly sick of hearing my own voice. But if you're not, you can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. Listen to any of these shows at blogtalkradio.com/RTK or subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you subscribe to podcasts. I'm going to be back again to preview the Jags game as Nick Foles and the Chiefs take on Jacksonville at home, in a game that the Chiefs just have to win, simply. And I think we'll certainly take care of business with. But not having Alex Smith, maybe not having Spencer Ware, the Chiefs have a lot of questions right now in the short term. But I think they have less questions in the long term than at any other point this season. For all of the things that you can be pessimistic about, all the injuries that make you sad and concerned for the future, I think right now as Chiefs fans, you should feel pretty much as stable as you felt all season, which might be kind of a terrifying change of pace. As always, thanks for listening. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Talk to you later. Bye, Mom.